ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Come here to hear, is it not? Yeah, so please turn off your cell phones, first thing. Hear this. You've come to hear. Hearing can be for different purposes. One purpose is for entertainment. I've not come to speak to entertain you. Another is almost like entertainment, but not quite. Time pass, as it's called. I've not come here just for time pass, and nor have you. Another reason to hear is to learn, to gain knowledge. You've come here, presumably, to learn, to gain knowledge. If we see how Srila Prabhupada spoke, he regularly spoke the same topics, repeatedly. He would speak on the same topics. Of course, it wasn't that his lectures were stereotyped, nor that he only spoke in lectures. Apart from his lectures, he dictated his books. He preached individually to people, both his disciples and others. But there were certain themes that were repeated. You are not the body, we are eternal spirit soul. Krishna is the... There is a supreme controller. We have to admit that there is God. He spoke much about those who are misleading, who are cheating. The whole of modern civilization is misleading, cheating. He spoke on social themes, Varnashram. He especially spoke about the cheating of science and of Mayavad, or what goes on in the name of science. And there were other sub-themes also, such as the cheating of governments, the nonsense of feminism, and so on. There were various themes. But he would often repeat what he said. We often hear, if we regularly listen to Srila Prabhupada's lectures, which I hope that you all do, we often hear Srila Prabhupada says, I have several times said. And you know that when Srila Prabhupada said that, you're going to hear something which you've heard not several times, but many times. So Srila Prabhupada's mode of speaking was certainly not to entertain, but to enlighten. And he spoke on the same themes again and again. One reason for that, as he mentions in one of his purports in Bhagavad Gita as it is that repetition is required for important subjects to hammer the point home. Now, I'm paraphrasing here. So I'll speak now some points which presumably you have heard before, which we all, theoretically at least, accept, but that it's important to hear again and again and again. Because learning in Krishna consciousness, it's not exactly like learning in a school or college where you are given some information. It may be more than information, it may be more complex than just some information. New Delhi is the capital of India. Alright, it's easily absorbable. It may be more complex, some mathematical formula which is not just some line that you have to remember, New Delhi is the capital of India, but you may have to understand it and to understand various mathematical theorems. There may be stages. You have to start with arithmetic and then you come gradually to algebra and so on. But spiritual knowledge is not like that. When you know something, you know it. When you've learned something, you know it. That's when you got some calculus problem and you can solve it. You know how to do it. Once you've learned, finished. Although your learning may be lost. As I have several times said, I can say about myself, I don't know how to solve calculus problems. I used to, but I forgot because I didn't attend to do so for more than 40 years. But if you keep in practice, then you can do it. You see that squiggly line and okay, I know what to do. But spiritual knowledge is not like that. Spiritual knowledge is to be heard, absorbed, understood at least theoretically, and practiced, and then comes realization. Shravan Manan Nididhyasana. This is the Vedic, from the Upanishads. Formula, we hear, we think about and try to understand, and then we meditate upon that. This hridayangam is one word, we take it into our heart. Chiteti kariya aikya. And we have to practice that. Then understanding comes by the grace of Krishna. As we sing daily, that Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chete Te Koriya Aikya Arna Kori Homane Asha. We hear from Guru, Guru speaks according to Shastra. We make that one with our heart and we have no other desire. And then by His mercy, then Dibhagyan Hride Prakashito. Then spiritual knowledge is revealed within the heart. So, some basic points that you've all heard before, I presume. You all understand, at least theoretically, but that we should hear again and again, because by hearing again and again, then that knowledge becomes solidified in the heart. To understand, New Delhi is the capital of India. It's straightforward fact. It's not an eternal fact. New Delhi is not eternal. India is not eternal. So it's a relative fact. But it's something that can be easily understood, and within our consciousness, we don't raise any opposition to that. We don't have any protesters. Why do you say New Delhi is the capital? There may be protesters saying that it should be shifted to Pune. There isn't, but theoretically there could be little entertainment here as we go along. Theoretically there could be, but there isn't. So it's an accepted fact. And we also accept the first point I mentioned, that this material world is full of suffering. We also accept, theoretically. But we have protest within our mind that, well, maybe it's not completely full of suffering. Maybe that's true, but in my case, there should be some scope for some enjoyment. It feels like I should be able to enjoy. I have a young body, it's healthy, it's made for enjoyment. If you don't enjoy now, then when are you going to do it? Better enjoy now. All these spiritual things you can think of later. But now, while you have the chance, enjoy while you can. So, protest may come in our mind. But actually it is a fact. And I said that in an assertive way. And when people speak in an assertive manner, then people tend to believe it, whatever nonsense it may be. But the fact that I'm saying it assertively doesn't make any difference to the fact. If I say assertively, Pune is the capital of India, that you might believe it because I say it with conviction, but still it is not a fact, it is not true. And any amount of assertiveness in saying it will not make it true. Unless, which seems very unlikely, the capital of India is shifted to Pune. But we should say it assertively. We should be convinced of this. Without being convinced of this, there is no actual beginning even of spiritual life. The fact that this material world is full of suffering is not in and of itself spiritual knowledge. It's knowledge about material existence, but it is the entrance, or it is the platform on which spiritual knowledge can begin to develop. Because as long as we are trying to enjoy this material world, we cannot make any spiritual advancement. So we should understand this. It might seem counterintuitive. That seems to be a fancy term nowadays, fashionable term. Counterintuitive. In other words, something that seems to be true, but or counterintuitive, it means it goes against what seems to be obvious. It seems to be obvious that this world is not full of suffering. Suffering is there, but there's happiness also. Even in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks of material happiness. Tetang bhuktva swarga lokang vishalam, Krishna says. Krishna speaks about the vishal, or extensive, happiness in swarga, in the heavenly world. So Krishna says that there is happiness in this material world. Those two terms are often used together, sukh and dukh, which means there's sukh in this material world. But then Krishna says that the characteristics, the two principal characteristics of this material world are that it is dukhalayam ashashvatam. It is a place of suffering. And everything here is temporary. So, if we understand this as the basic principle, that this world is full of suffering, and the ashashvata, the fact that this everything here is temporary, that can be subsumed under dukhalaya. Actually, even one word is enough. Dukhalayam, because that everything here is temporary is one of the symptoms of the suffering, but it is a major symptom, and therefore Krishna has spoken that to emphasize it also, make a point of that. Because even if we think, well, I'm very happy, but it won't last. So the material happiness, it's never pure and full, it's always accompanied by anxiety, various kinds of physical and mental distress. And at least in the back of our mind, we know that it won't last. And actually it won't last. And for someone who has been in a situation of what they consider to be material happiness, that position gives them the opportunity or to suffer more. Just like in Gita, Krishna says, Sambhavitasya chakyute marana adati ruchyate. For one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. So, for one who remembers that they have enjoyed, for them the experience of suffering is greater. In Pune, as in any major city of India, there are, apart from the burgeoning middle class who like to talk about and think about India's great progress, there is a large subclass of very poor people. The opulence of the middle class is economically based on what amounts to direct or indirect exploitation of the very poor class. Anyway, that's a socio-economic, political factor. So someone who has no money and very little means, anyway they're struggling. But someone who previously had plenty of money and comes to the position of having no money, for them they suffer more than the person who was born into that situation. We don't see that so much in India because there are family networks. That's breaking down also. But in America there are many people who previously had big houses and prestigious jobs or owned their own businesses who now have nothing, no place to stay. They may sleep under a bridge at night, it gives a little shelter, and their suffering is very great. So I'm just saying this as some example to make the point that this world is full of suffering, even if we say there is some happiness, but happiness is the precursor to distress, and those who enjoy more, they have to suffer more. One reason being because after the experience of opulence, during which period they're not actually happy. Anyway, we see in the advertisements people riding motorcycles and looking very happy. But in real life, people riding motorcycles don't look particularly happy. And with everything else, drinking Pepsi and they look happy. But you drink Pepsi and you can go on drinking Pepsi all day, and it won't make you happy. There's nothing in there to make you happy. So that's one factor, that people who have had the opportunity to have some wealth and some what is considered some happy situation, if they lose that, they suffer more. And another factor is that generally, people who have the opportunity to indulge in sense gratification do so, and sense gratification, if indulged in a pious way, means that one loses one's pious credit, so one has to fall from that situation. But nowadays, no one even knows that even the word punya and pap may become lost from the Hindi language because no one knows what it means anymore. So people, they are performing what are sinful activities and they have to suffer. So we have to suffer. We think that we're enjoying, but actually this world is full of suffering, and we should know that. You've all heard it before. We should know it as a fact. It's not simply a Hindu belief. Because I'm a Hindu, I know something from Bhagavad Gita. Well, actually, those two things don't go together. It used to be, but now, what does it mean to be a Hindu? Anyway, I won't get stuck on that question. That's a tough question. But anyway, it is a fact that this world is full of suffering. That we should know very clearly. That is an impetus to get out of it. We are not meant to be here. Now, another fact which we should understand, vital fact, is that we are eternal and that suffering in material life is also as if eternal. As long as we don't get liberated from this material world, we have to suffer birth after birth after birth. Reincarnation is a fact. It's not a Hindu belief. Hindus, Buddhists and Jains all believe in reincarnation. But it's not a belief. It's not that, well, because I'm a Hindu, I'll be reincarnated. But if I convert to Islam, then I won't be. Then I'll just go to heaven and all the Hindus will go to heaven. It's not a question of belief. This we hear Srila Prabhupada say many times. It is not a question of belief. It is a fact. Either reincarnation is a fact or it isn't. It is not a question of belief. Either New Delhi is the capital of India or it isn't. It doesn't depend on anyone's opinion, not even the opinion of Sonia Gandhi. It's not a matter of opinion. Of course, it might be her opinion that the capital should be shifted to Rome or anywhere else, but but as far as now is concerned, if she says the capital of India is Pune, to be less political, it would be incorrect. Even if there was the top authority on political science in India who asserted Pune is the capital of India, it would still be wrong. Because there are certain facts which do not depend on anyone's opinion. What is true is true. It is transcendental to anyone's opinion. So reincarnation is a fact. We should understand. We may say, no, it's just, well, we don't know. We're not sure. Well, we should be sure. We should know. These are important things to understand. So we should know. Is it a fact or it isn't a fact? How will we understand? Well, we can understand, there are different ways of understanding. One way is from Shastra. Once in Sweden, Srila Prabhupada met an Indian doctor who was nevertheless quite atheistic, it seems. The doctor asked Srila Prabhupada, what is the proof of the existence of the soul? And Srila Prabhupada said, because Krishna says so in Bhagavad Gita, which the doctor didn't accept. But Srila Prabhupada in that circumstance wanted to make that point, that Shastra gives knowledge. So that's one way we can accept. Another way we can accept, if we don't want to just say, well, Krishna says, we say, well, who cares what Krishna says? Many people will say, who cares what Krishna says? So we may understand from Shastra through Krishna's explanations, which Srila Prabhupada often, more often than simply asserting that Krishna said so, which is actually the best evidence. But Krishna himself explains it. And Srila Prabhupada often explains this, Dehino smenyatha dehe kaumarang yovanang jara tata dehantara praptihi. That this, in three quarters of a verse, Srila Prabhupada explains the principle. Sorry, Krishna explains the principle, and Srila Prabhupada often extrapolated this to explain that the body and mind of a young boy changes. Of everyone, it changes at every nanosecond. So that the body and mind of the child is not the same as that of a youth. And the body, the body and mind of a youth that changes again and again, so that if we see the body of a youth and compare that, if we have a photo of the 4-year-old and the 14-year-old, it's the same person, but the body has undergone many transformations. And then if we compare to 40 years old, if we have photos, we'll see it's different. And then 80 years old. So change is going on, which means that it's different. But there is a steady principle which doesn't change, by which we can understand that it's the same person. That steady principle is the person is the soul. So as the body is always changing, but the person stays the same, therefore we understand that the person is an unchanging principle. The death of the body is also a change, but we understand that the soul is not affected by that. And what happens, as Krishna says, dehantara prapti. It's very... If we try to understand, even logically, it's very logical to understand that the body is different to the soul. There's no life within chemicals. We can bring all the chemicals that are present in a body, but we can't induce them to be alive. Other examples that Srila Prabhupada gave, if they're a newborn child is sometimes born dead, the physical composition is the same as that of a live-born child. So, what happened? What's the difference? If it's only chemicals, then make the chemical adjustment to bring the dead child back to life. But that cannot be done. So we can understand. We can also... There are many ways to understand that the soul leaves the body. And enters, again, if we understand that consciousness is the symptom of the soul, it cannot be produced from chemicals, then it's independent from the chemicals. That means it should continue to exist. After the death of the body. Which also explains why some people are born into rich families and others are born into poor families. To me, in my youth, it was it made much sense to me that if we accept that there is God, the Supreme Controller, then why should God and place us in a situation where we have one chance only? That's what I was taught, Christian upbringing. You have one chance only. If you don't do it properly, you have to burn in hell forever. But this is not very appealing. We like to think that God is good after all. But he's good, then why does he create most people? They're not Christians, so he creates them just to burn them in hell forever. Doesn't seem proper. And then some people are born in a situation in which they may never hear of the Christian message. Or even if they do, they're not much inclined to it. Just like all of you, I presume, are probably from Hindu backgrounds. So you're not so much inclined to accept the Christian or Islamic message as someone who was born into that culture. So why should God place some people at a disadvantage from the start? It doesn't make any sense. But if we understand that there is reincarnation, birth after birth after birth, that means that we are born into different situations according to our previous life. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti jan gunan karam gunasangasya sadasad yoni janmasu. We're stuck in this material nature because we're trying to enjoy it. We're trying to enjoy the three modes of material nature. And because of association with those modes, we get different births, higher and lower. So, although reality may not be fully understandable by our intelligence, but we don't expect that it's completely absurd. So reincarnation also appeals to the sense of goodness, of order, of fairness. And also, if we believe in scientific proof, there's plenty of scientific proof of reincarnation. Although mainstream scientists reject it, as they reject everything else which they don't like to believe. Science, we're told, is supposed to be dispassionate analysis of reality, but it's not. There are many things which scientists just a priori reject because they don't want to believe it. So these are some basic facts. The world is full of suffering, there is reincarnation. And then the question should come, then why are we here in this world of suffering? Let's get out of it. That's the obvious conclusion if we accept these two facts. Whether we accept or not accept, it's a fact. Fact means fact. If you don't believe it, well, try to understand. Because again, your whatever you believe, that does not create reality. We are controlled. We are not the controllers. So I'm going to say, I don't believe that this world is full of suffering. By saying that, we shall not be able to stop suffering, which will come upon us. By saying that, I don't believe in rebirth. That won't stop it happening. So if we don't believe it or accept it, or we have doubts, well, that's understandable, but we should try to find out what is the actual fact, what is the truth. These are the most important matters. Isn't it? Most important to understand these points. Which also means that pretty much everyone in this world is cheated from the beginning of their lives. And especially in the name of modern education, it's simply cheating. Because they don't teach these things. without teaching these things, then the whole project of education is based on a wrong premise. No one comes into the class and gives us class on what is the purpose of life. It's just understood and accepted by everybody that you have to get a good qualification so you can get a good job and earn money, and then you'll be happy. It's the unstated premise, but it's not true. Therefore, it's cheating. The very fact that they don't teach you what you most need to know means that those who are teaching are fools and rascals. They may not think they're also victims, because they were raised in such a culture and they believe it to be true, but they're wrong. One should not take the position of a teacher unless they know what they are teaching. So you may say, well, I'm just teaching engineering or something like that. But what is the premise? The premise is that work hard, get a job, go on working hard, get money, be respectable, be a success, and that's it. But that this world is full of suffering, and that we have to get born again and again, to suffer again and again, and die again and again, no one teaches that. So the whole society is cheating. From the very basis of it is based, it's a pact among everybody just to cheat each other. Just like there's rivalry between India and Pakistan, and now between Russia and the NATO forces. And it goes on like that, between Hindus and Muslims, between Christians and Muslims, between Christians and Christians, different sects, between Muslims and Muslims, different sects. And it goes on. But everyone, they're all in the same illusion that we are meant to enjoy this world, or maybe the next world. The idea is that, well, you be religious and you go to heaven or whatever you call it, and you be happy then. It's all self-centered. One of the previous Archbishops of Canterbury. The Archbishop of Canterbury is the second biggest position in the Christian world, after the Pope. The Pope is the head, supposed to be, although not many people believe what he says, he's supposed to be the head of the Catholics. And then there are many, many Protestant denominations. Protestant means they protest. And when you protest, and then you set up something else, and then someone protests against you, and you get a parampara. And so there are many, many, many denominations. There's this succession course. One of the things, if God is one, why are there so many religions? Well, maybe you could ask Martin Luther the answer to that. He was the ideologist of the Protestant Reformation. So the head of the Church of England, which is symbolically considered the parent church of the Church of Scotland, the Church of Ireland, the Episcopalian or something like that, church in America and so on, he was asked that what do you want to do when you go to heaven? He already died, and maybe he went to heaven. He was just presumed, the journalist who asked him presumed that the Archbishop was going to heaven. Although according to this spiritual science, we understand from Bhagavad Gita that people who are accustomed to eat beef and drink wine, their destination is likely to be not so auspicious. So anyway, he was asked, what do you want to do when you go to heaven? What, you see the question? What do you want to do? It's all based on one's own personal enjoyment. So his reply was, well, for the first 100 years, I will glorify God. Then after that, I'll enjoy myself. So this means the big Christian leader, absolutely no idea of, no spiritual knowledge whatsoever. So, Hindus, Christians, Muslims, Indians, Pakistanis, everyone is in this illusion that we are meant, everything is meant for my enjoyment. Ishvaroham aham bhogi. Basic misconception of everybody. When we say fools and rascals, we're not... It's not that we have anything against anybody, but it's just a statement of the facts. We don't have anything against any particular community. Everyone comes under that category. Fools and rascals. Murho yang na bijananati. Fools, Krishna says, do not know me. So this Krishna consciousness movement is meant for spiritual education. And it's a very serious, nothing could be more serious than this. We are meant to learn, to absorb, to take very seriously. What to do? We should collect all the cell phones and give them back afterward. So this is a serious education. Hearing is essential. We should hear again and again and again about the misery of this material world. We should hear also about the positive situation in the service of Krishna, the spiritual world. Chintamani prakara sadmasu kalpavriksha lakshavriteshu surabhir abhipalayantam lakshmi sahasra shata sambrama sevyamanam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. In the spiritual world, Krishna, Govinda, the original personality of Godhead, who we are to worship, he dwells in that spiritual abode where everything is made of wish-fulfilling stones. The trees are wish-fulfilling trees. There are unlimited numbers of transcendental cows and transcendental goddesses of fortune who serve Krishna with great affection. This is the situation of the spiritual world. First, we have to understand that I do not belong in this material world. I'm not meant to be here. I have nothing actually to do with this material world. We should understand this very clearly, because it seems counterintuitive. What does it mean? I don't have anything to do with this material world. I'm born in India and... I'll die in India, and I'm Indian, and I have my mother and my father and my brother and sister. What does it mean? What does it mean? Everything here is temporary. Our present situation, we're born into it. How many fathers and mothers and brothers and sisters have we had? How many brothers and sisters do you have? It used to be a common question. Nowadays it's not, because it's hamare do. That's all, you know. It's one, that's all. It's like become like a rule. Ham do, hamare do. But it used to be common. How many? And it was considered if you had more brothers and sisters, that was better. Now if you have more than two, it's considered something wrong. At least among Hindus. So, how many brothers and sisters do you have? How many brothers and sisters have you had? And then it becomes uncountable. Some fish, guppies, they're commonly kept as aquarium fish, at least in the West. They have hundreds of eggs, hundreds of little guppies hatch at one time. And then the adult guppies go around eating their little babies, their own babies. And then the guppy population comes down. So you may have had, if you're born as a guppy fish, you may have had hundreds and hundreds of fish brothers and sisters all in one lifetime. Or some snakes, they give birth to many, many snakes at a time. How many brothers and sisters have we had? How many parents have we had? It seems real. Everything here seems real. But it's not real to the full extent. It's an illusion in as much as it's temporary. You've all seen a kaleidoscope. So you look through, you see some design, then you just shake it a little bit and it's changed. And again, and again, and again. So like that. If we speed up, if you just like you see is in photography, video photography, you can speed up. So if we speed up our life sequence, you'll see, oh, here's my father. Oh, another father, another father, another father. So if we consider in terms of eternal time, it has no real meaning. It seems like it has meaning, but then we have to understand from this perspective of spiritual knowledge. So to try to understand this. If we don't understand this, then we've really missed our opportunity, which is there in this human form of life. Then it's just useless. We get a human birth after many, many births. This is the chance. It's cat birth, dog birth. We're going quickly. Cat, dog, tree, mustard plant, palm tree. And we get one birth, another birth, another. Human birth. Okay, now's the chance. Now is the chance. Labdhva sudurlabha midang bahu sambhavante manusham artadama nityam apihadhera. Turnam yateta napateta numritya yava nishrayasaya vishaya kalu sarvatasyat. We have attained this human birth after many, many births. It is very rare, but it is very valuable, even though it's very brief. It's very valuable because it affords us the opportunity to get free from birth and death. Therefore, an intelligent person, considering all these things, should do whatever is necessary in this life so that he does not have to get born again. And if we think, well, I should enjoy myself, then we can consider, I enjoyed as a cat, I enjoyed as a dog, I enjoyed as a camel, I enjoyed as a monkey. And if I want, I can go on as a cat, dog, monkey, tree. But now is the chance. So we should take that very seriously. It looks like a lot of little pieces of paper with questions on. So I'll take that. I'll take some questions. Many not relevant to the class. Do you have any relevant to the class? Yes. You're giving first ones which are relevant. Many questions may take much time to answer, but there's not so much time. So I'll have to go through them briefly. We do have Srila Prabhupada's books. So by reading these books again and again, and of course following the process of devotional service, then everything will become clear. So that's good advice for everyone, to study Srila Prabhupada's books regularly, carefully, very deeply. When says to people that body is continuously changing, but person is the same, but person is also changing. What is that word? I can't. My likings are changing. My interest or enjoyment of my tendencies are also changing. Then explain those people that person is remaining the same. Your servant, blank. He fainted in ecstasy at that point. Maybe. Yeah, well, this is the point. The body is always changing and the mind is always changing, but let's make it more clear. The identity stays the same, isn't it? So even though the body is changing at every moment and the mind is changing, the identity stays the same. So that factor by which we identify ourselves as the same person, that is unchanging. That is the person. The manifestation of consciousness changes at every moment, but the fact that we are conscious does not change. The fact that we are a unique individual unit of consciousness, different from every other unit of consciousness, that remains the same. What is the concept of two souls in one body? Ramananda Rai, souls of Arjuna as well as Vishakha Devi. That's very esoteric. But there are more than two souls in everybody. Anyway, if we see all the cells in the body, they're also souls are propelling them. Otherwise, in the case of Ramananda Rai, some people say, well, according to one version, Arjuna, according to another version, Vishakha, that may be because he served Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in different capacities. So different personalities, they manifest to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the same form. Question: how do we have patience to be what college mates comment on us? What's that word? Bata? Baba, etc. Tumhein agar baba hoon to tum beta ho, tumheri baat suno. You can try that one. Or you can tell them that birth, death, old age and disease, these are facts. And any amount of your trying to avoid it won't change that. You can tell them. But they may have a very strong armor around them. They have a anti-adhyatmik kavach. By which they won't hear. But anyway, you can tell them. You can tell them that, okay, you go on, you enjoy, you have your life, you have your wife, you have your divorce, you have your heart problems, you have your stress, and then you come and see me. Come and see me after 10, 15, 20 years, or maybe sooner. When your girlfriend kicks you in the face. Maybe some of you are here after being kicked in the face. After being kicked in the face by your girlfriend. Then you may think, yes, the material world is full of suffering. Shunyayatam jagat sarvam. Girlfriend virahename. There's no suffering greater. It's a fact. People, they intensely suffer when rejected by a girlfriend. They intensely suffer. So there are many people who commit suicide. Stupid people, just some. But you can tell them, okay. You can scoff, but there will come a time. You just remember, there will come a time when you may want to hear what I have to say. I'm open, just remember. You can remember me at that time. It's absolutely sure that there will come a time in your life when you feel some chaos and confusion. So, you go on scoffing as much as you like, but later, you just remember, you can come to me. You can tell them that.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Yeah. I'm taking these ones. One man asked me that if everything comes out by source, then what is the source of God? That's a common question, but it's a stupid question, because God is the source of everything, what is the source of God? But God by definition is the source of everything and has no source. Otherwise you get into the logical fallacy of regression. What is the source of God? Then what is the source of the source of God? And what is the source of the source of God? So, in logic, that's called the fallacy of infinite regression. If there's a basis to everything, the basis of everything is the supreme absolute truth. If there's a source of God, then God is not God. Let me go on. Srila Prabhupada says that there is no conflict between any religious scriptures. Then why do Muslims and Christians eat beef? Well, in essence, there is no conflict between religious scriptures. In essence, all religious scriptures accept that there is a supreme controller, and we are meant to serve that supreme controller. But even within individual scriptures, there are apparent contradictions. Even within religious traditions, there are apparent contradictions. Even in Bhagavad Gita, we'll find there are apparent contradictions. Srila Prabhupada, in one purport, he said that there are three scriptures of the Yavanas: the Old Testament, the New Testament, and the Quran. This comment comes in the section where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu charged Chand Qazi, the Muslim magistrate, that the compilers of your scriptures, they did not have very good knowledge. Otherwise, how could they recommend to kill the cow, who is your mother. It's not a good principle. So different scriptures have been compiled for different people at different levels. But the basic understanding should be the same. Yeah, go on. If Krishna is the Supreme, that's a theoretical question. His all creation is perfect. So why are we suffering in this material world? Yes, Krishna has perfectly arranged this material world so that we may suffer in it. It's perfectly imperfect. We should understand what perfection means. Perfection means to, we are by nature perfect. We are meant for Satchidananda, eternity, bliss and knowledge. But when we come to this material world by choice, then we have a perfect arrangement to forget Krishna. But if we forget Krishna, then we are in the situation of Asat, Achit, Nirananda. So it's perfectly arranged for our suffering. We want the kingdom of God without God. We cannot define what is perfection. I want, material world should be that everything should be just as I want it. But we are not the controllers. We are subordinate. So we have to accept what Krishna ordains for us. And if we do so, we should be very happy. We don't have to suffer here. This material world is full of suffering because we chose that. Don't blame Krishna. It's our own fault. If Krishna is supreme, then he must fulfill our desires. Rubbish. If he's supreme, we should fulfill his desires. It's round the other way. If he is supreme, he must fulfill our desire. That means that he thinks that you think that I am supreme. Rascaldom. Actually, that's rascal. It's the same. Your servant with no name. At least he put your servant. Others didn't put that. Yeah, go on. How to stop sense gratification? Come out of lust? Well, you have to follow the process. There's a process for doing so. There's positive process is to chant Hare Krishna, associate with devotees. Negative, not really negative, but avoidance. We should avoid bad association. We have to make a decision to not engage anymore in sense gratification. This one book, which I wrote, Brahmacharya and Krishna Consciousness, that's very helpful for that. Yeah. Though we understand that we have had many parents and families in previous lives, we still have some duty towards parents. Is it possible to be Krishna conscious without regarding parents as family? Yes. Shastra also enjoins that, well, there are different injunctions for different people in different situations. The general situation is that we should honor our parents. That is there in Shastra. At the same time, we should understand that the situation we're in is temporary. So both things are going on side by side. When a new person sees that, if a person goes to ISKCON, he becomes a mendicant like that, they fear to approach devotees or hear from them. What should be our disposition or role to favorably attract them? Yeah, it's a dilemma, isn't it? Because we want to bring people to Krishna consciousness, which means they have a completely different outlook. They're not, If you become Krishna conscious, then you no longer want to go to parties. You don't want to talk about cricket and girls and all this thing which people talk about. So you become practically dead to all your friends. You lose all your friends. They're not your friends anymore, because the friendship was on the basis of sharing common interests, and you don't have that common interest anymore. And people are afraid of that. But what does that mean? Then should we talk about cricket a little bit and talk about girls a little bit and make people think that, well, he's normal, and then just all of a sudden say, chant Hare Krishna? I don't know if it's going to work. Well, I have another book about that. It's called On Speaking Strongly in Srila Prabhupada's Service, how we have to commit ourselves to speak the truth even if people don't like it, and those who are more sincere will accept that. And side by side we can have program. Building a temple is for people may come, and pious people like to come and take darshan, and there are festivals like Rath Yatra. So then it becomes a dilemma for the materialistic people. On one side it looks very nice, on the other side I don't want to be like that. But if they're exposed more and more to Krishna consciousness, then they may more and more accept it. But it's an unavoidable situation, that whoever is serious about spiritual life is not much appreciated by materialistic people. Or they may appreciate just that, okay, he's a Baba, I'll go there and take blessings and I'll come back. But if the Baba tries to make you also into a Baba, then they don't like that. They like the kind of sadhus who, okay, he's a sadhu and he gives you blessings so that you can go on in your nonsense. And he may even give you instruction. The art of, what's that called? The art of something or other. And it's all about how to get on and adjust in this material world. It's rascaldom, because sadhus are supposed to teach the message of Bhagavad Gita, which is that this world is full of suffering. So if you want to be socially acceptable, then you can go and join. There are so many cheaters. If we want to speak what Krishna speaks and what Srila Prabhupada has told us to speak, we can expect that we won't be as popular as those who are cheating in the name of spiritual life. So it is a dilemma, because we want to bring people to Krishna consciousness, but they may be reluctant to do so if they think that my whole material situation will change. But on the other hand, there are people who at least have some beginning understanding that, well, maybe my material situation should change, because I've partied, I've taken wine, I've had girls, but I'm frustrated. Maybe I should try something else. So there are plenty of people like that also. Anyway, this subject is discussed in some detail in this book On Speaking Strongly in Srila Prabhupada's Service, which if you like, you can also read. The real power in preaching comes not from techniques, but from purity. If someone doesn't want to accept Krishna consciousness, then why some devotees from our society force them to become devotees? You can't force anyone to take up devotional service. You can't force them. But if they don't want to, then it is mercy to try to change their mind by any means. Just like a child may not want to take the medicine, but the mother may forcefully give it against the child's protests. So someone may come and say, why are you, the child is screaming, and why are you you're supposed to be the mother, you're supposed to be kind and compassionate, and what are you doing? You're upsetting the child so much. Who will complain if the child is screaming because the mother is forcefully giving required medicine? Then who should complain? Anyone can understand that the mother is acting for the benefit of the child. But you can't force anyone. The idea that you force someone to become a devotee, it's not possible. Everyone has minute independence to accept or not accept Krishna consciousness. We can put pressure on people, but we can't force them. Okay, I'll take one more question, then I'll finish. What inspired you to dedicate your life to Srila Prabhupada? Well, it wasn't so much that I was inspired to dedicate my life to Srila Prabhupada as much as Srila Prabhupada picked me up from the darkest of ignorance. So that inspired me. I'm holding on to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. That's all. It's for me, it's survival. So again, if you want to know more about that, I have a book called My Memories of Srila Prabhupada, which explains how Srila Prabhupada mercifully saved me. Some people ask me about my life previous to coming to Krishna consciousness. I also wrote about that in one of my books. I can give it in two or three lines. I was just a dog, that's all. There's no use to describe. Just dog-like life, that's all. So no need to talk anything more about it. Okay, Hare Krishna. Thank you for your inquisitiveness about the proper topics about which we should be inquisitive. I must recommend you to all very seriously study Srila Prabhupada's books. If you want to take some of my books, you also can. They're supplementary. The main books are Srila Prabhupada's. Srila Prabhupada's books are the law books for the next 10,000 years.